You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin Wakes Up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
7:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us. Happy Friday. Looking forward to another weekend. And of course, we're gonna keep reminding you to keep an eye on the weather today as your afternoon progresses. We do have a chance for some severe weather across the state. This is our last round, though, for a while, Brian, because then the forecast looks cold for a couple of days, talking back into the 40s. And then next week, we're going to kind of start escalating slowly things back up into the low 60s, into the low 70s. So a nice ramp up is nice because we went from like 30 to 80 with storms.
Yeah.
That's not good for anybody.
Yeah. I don't want to every morning go, do I go shorts? Do I wear pants? Do I put my winter coat away? I don't know.
It's an annoying time of year.
I don't know what's going on. It is, but it is Friday, and be careful. Jamie, may I co-opt your famous saying that you made famous yesterday? Be careful. There's still a lot of flooding in the state, so turn around. Don't drown.
That's right.
Parker, have we got that printed out yet?
I'm sorry.
On a T-shirt?
The T-shirt place is a little slow. But I can't.
Bumper stickers?
Yeah, no.
Do people still use bumper stickers?
On their laptops.
So. Deer whistles?
We're getting fancy now.
Here, this is the best I can do for you.
There you go. Love it. Thank
you.
There's no apostrophe and there's no comma.
Turn around, don't drown.
All right, you guys getting all particular.
Yeah, well, why don't we focus on the news and you work on a simple sentence. Let's check some headlines from the Middle East. The Israeli and Lebanese governments agreed to the ceasefire following more than a month of war between Israel and the Iran-backed Hezbollah militant group in Lebanon. Nearly 2,200 people in Lebanon have been killed by Israeli airstrikes.
In other headlines, Hezbollah said in a statement that, quote, any ceasefire must be comprehensive across all Lebanese territory and must not allow the Israeli enemy any freedom of movement. Israel has, of course, staged a ground invasion in southern Lebanon, which Netanyahu says Israel will continue to occupy during the ceasefire. Hezbollah said that continuing Israeli occupation grants Lebanon the right to resist.
And finally, Pakistan's army chief met with Iranian officials in Tehran on Thursday in a bid to extend the separate ceasefire between Israel, the U.S., and Iran. Uncertainty does remain whether the frantic diplomacy can lead to a deal. A second round of U.S.-Iran talks hasn't been scheduled yet. Pakistan's foreign ministry spokesperson reported that yesterday. All right, well, there's not... And still, we don't know what's going on with the U.S.
No.
And Iran. The ceasefire is going on. There's not a lot of news today coming out of the region between us and Iran. It's mostly now Israel who started this whole thing.
They did start the whole thing.
By convincing our weak leader to...
The only thing I will say is that President Trump is still holding strong with the that this war will be over within the next couple of weeks. He put out the statements. He's been on several media platforms over the course of the last few days, and every time he's been asked, he is holding firm.
So nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed.
He's been saying we won the war since actually I think before he started the war by himself, he thought we had won. Quick sidebar. You know my love of Whiskey Pete.
Mm-hmm.
And did you see the footage of him using a fake Bible verse? This goes back to yesterday when I was railing against people who are not Christian, wrapping themselves in Christianity to try to sell their thing. And he used the Bible verse that was made up by Quentin Tarantino in Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
And if you run it side by side with the Sam Jackson clip, it's exact.
Yes.
He lifted what he thought was a real Bible verse, which was a fake Bible verse from an R-rated film, and tried to pass. And I don't think he knew. I honestly don't believe he's smart enough to have known that that was not a real thing. He just went, it sounds really tough, and I'm as tough as Sam Jackson, so I'll deliver it myself.
I'll also say that even if you look at it from the angle of, it also proves that, as you said, he likes to wrap himself in Christianity without actually probably not being a Christian. Like, I'm not going to get into the faith of Pete Hegseth.
Yeah,
just not understanding, though, that this is not a real Bible verse would make me question whether or not he's a true Christian or not.
Look it up, Pete. If you think that's true, I'm sure if it's if you thought it was real, it in his Bible, if he has one at home, it would be highlighted. That page would be dog-eared because you'd be like, oh, man, I will lay my vengeance down upon thee. That's what,
Can I tell you that you could go online and just do a Google search and you can put in the Bible verse itself and it will tell you where it comes from, what part of the Bible. Like, this is a search you could do. It's not actually hard. Anybody can do this if you want to actually know where a particular verse comes from in the Bible.
This coming from an administration that is trying to take on the Pope. All right. we'll leave that
irony
there. That's for you to ruminate on, but there is other stuff you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
Yes. Oh, this is much closer to home.
Yes.
Not here in Wisconsin, but 90 miles off the coast of Florida. Cuba's president says his nation does not want war with the United States, but he vows that if attacked, Cubans would defeat American forces. Miguel Diaz-Canel addressed a crowd of government supporters commemorating the 65th anniversary Thursday of the start of the Bay of Pigs invasion, the failed attempt by a CIA-trained force of Cuban exiles to oust Fidel Castro, prompted the Cuban revolutionary leader to openly declare his support for socialism for the first time, setting up a Cold War-era standoff with the U.S. that endures to this day. Referencing growing tensions with the Trump administration, Diaz-Canel told the crowd, "We have to be ready to resist serious threats, including military aggression. We do not seek it, but it is our duty to prepare to avert it and, should it prove inevitable, to win it. As long as there is a woman and a man willing to give their lives for the revolution, we will be victorious." A group of government supporters in the crowd chanted, "We do not want to be an American colony."
Wow. So we're already living in a time where global tensions are high. And now you have these statements coming from Cuba's president. I mean, history tells us that these situations don't go well and don't come out of nowhere. So what are we doing?
Well, what we're doing is witnessing a regime in our country that wants to control the entire hemisphere. He'll work on the rest after. He's already trying with Iran to, you know, take over their oil cash and everything else and get his nuclear dust, as he calls it, which everybody's like, what? Okay. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's not going to go well. Now, his infatuation with Cuba may just be a passing thing. He tends to lose interest quickly. Venezuela, to him, made sense because he was able to commandeer their oil.
Sure.
Cuba, you know, he doesn't smoke cigars, so it'll probably come back later. But Greenland, we don't hear about Greenland anymore,
yeah,
since basically the whole world told him you can't take over Greenland. Cuba will be the same kind of thing. He will lose interest then, because come November, he's going to have a whole new list of problems.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I think the Cuba thing was just talk. He was feeling, this was before the war, he was feeling sure of himself. His decisions were being unchecked, as they still are. And he threw that one off, too, because maybe somebody mentioned Cuba when he was at Mar-a-Lago on the golf course. And he went, you know, we're going to take them over, too.
I miss diplomacy. I miss, like, actual diplomacy, and I miss people who can temper down these flames and essentially go in and be like, okay, let's figure this out. Let's have a nice compromise. And I hate that we are the country that continues to fan those flames, because that's essentially what this administration continues to do. And it's just dangerous for everybody. We've already got this conflict with the Middle East. Let's everybody settle down.
And you know, it may prove out to be like Iran, where he underestimates the ability, not the ability of our military. Our military is unparalleled, but he underestimates the resolve of the people he is trying to conquer.
Yeah.
And just like he did with Iran, he figured once we dropped some bombs, they were going to just roll over, and they did not. And I don't believe Cuba would roll over either.
No, I don't believe so. And that one's a lot closer to U.S. territory. Let's be right. be clear when we're talking about Cuba. Roger chiming in this morning on the text line, talking about Pete Hegseth, saying Pete doesn't know the difference between the Strait of Hormuz and the Strait of Vermouth. So thank you, Roger, for the comment this morning. If you do want have any comments you'd like to make, we'd love to hear from you. 1-855-752-4842. That's 1-855-75-CIVIC. In other headlines of stuff you need to know. Former Virginia Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, this is a really sad story. Yeah. He was a once rising star in the Democratic Party whose tenure was marred by sexual assault allegations. He actually shot and killed his wife, Serena Fairfax, inside their home and then killed himself, according to police. The couple's two teenage children were inside the home when the shootings occurred. Fairfax County Police Chief Kevin Davis said, noting their son had placed the 911 call. Fairfax County Police responded to the home shortly after midnight yesterday, where they found a man and a woman dead inside. The shooting stemmed from an ongoing domestic dispute surrounding what seems to be a complicated or messy divorce, according to police. Serena Fairfax filed for divorce on July 18th of 2025, and the case status is pending, according to the Fairfax County Circuit Court records. A show cause order issued on April 10th directed Justin Fairfax to appear in court on April 21st. Detectives have now reviewed the incident using a lot of cameras, which were set up inside the home as part of the couple's ongoing divorce proceedings. I mean, this situation, it's an awful situation. And I guess when I read this, my heart goes out to the two teenagers, especially the one who found his parents and then had to make the call to 911. And that's a family that obviously is never, ever going to be the same. And it's a horrible situation.
Yeah, not much more to say about that one. It is just awful. Remember the ballroom that was being built where the East Wing used to be? Well, the East Wing's no more. And then there was going to be a bunker built. And then a judge said, well, you can't build the ballroom anymore. Well, a federal judge set new limits on President Trump's planned White House ballroom, saying construction could proceed only on an underground portion of the project deemed necessary by the military and not the 90,000 square foot above ground addition that Trump has eyed to entertain his VIP guests at his own little palace of Versailles. National security is not a blank check to proceed with otherwise unlawful activity, U.S. District Judge Richard Leon wrote yesterday. He said the Trump administration could also take steps to secure the construction site to make it safe for people on the White House grounds, to protect the structural integrity of the building, and to shield the underground work. Leon then chastised the administration for its, quote, incredible, if not disingenuous, interpretation of his order last month to halt work on Trump's planned $400 million project until the president obtains authorization from Congress. Yeah, nothing makes a judge madder than when you disregard their orders. You go, well,
they're weird like that.
Yes. His original order allowed the White House to do further construction to ensure the safety and security of the White House after officials said work on an underground emergency bunker was necessary to protect the president, his family, and staff. Trump, who has mischaracterized Leon's earlier rulings as victories for the White House, attacked the judge Thursday on social media, calling him a man who has gone out of his way to undermine national security and to make sure that this great gift to America gets delayed. No judge can be allowed to stop this historic and military imperative project. Au contraire, Donnell.
What a blemish on American history. On a building that we pay for. It's a building taxpayers pay for. It's America's building.
No taxpayer
building.
Money is going to the ballroom. Greatest ballroom ever.
What
it's
a 720.
Blemish. This is Daybreak on the Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
722 right now. Thank you so much for joining us all across the state. If you're listening in Appleton or Oshkosh, Wausau this morning, La Crosse, we are certainly glad that you are joining us. It is time for Swiper's Day. This is where we leave the politics talk behind for just a few minutes. Seven minutes to be exact is what we're going
to
leave behind with our senior producer, Frank. So good morning.
For the most part.
How are you today?
Good. I'm doing, you know what? I am awake.
There you go.
There you go. That's a good attitude on
I'm
a Friday.
Awake.
Nice Buffalo Trace bourbon sweatshirt. I love it.
I know. It was weird. We got our air conditioning fixed yesterday, so it was like, now it's cold.
Now it's too cold.
Now it's too cold.
Do you have a thermostat? Do you have a thermostat?
Yeah,
okay,
it's,
all right.
Yeah, it's
I'm in
hot
the basement.
Or freezing.
Yeah.
That's his thermostat.
Those are,
it's just a big switch.
We got to dial it in. We just moved in here. We're going to dial it in.
All
it's
right.
Gonna
Let's
be
dial
fine.
In some swipe or stay. Let's
I agree,
rolling.
Brian. So here's how it's going to work. I'm going to read some pop culture headlines. Brian and Jamie are going to have to decide whether to stay on it and hear more or swipe on to the next one. In the event of a tie, Parker gets to choose. So let's move on. Story number one, rapper slash singer arrested for murder.
Ooh, I know this one, Stay. This is a juicy story.
Murder? Yeah, okay. I'm down.
Murder.
This has been going on for a while, too.
This has been going on.
Beef?
No.
This is not a rap beef.
No, this is
bad. I want to make that very clear. This is like real stuff going on.
This is like Lifetime movie drama.
Well, let's hear it.
So David, or spelled D4VD, was finally arrested by
LAPD.
Who is
it, 4VD? Sorry.
Oh, man. Where's the rim shot when you need it? Now, I say finally because the body of a 14-year-old girl was found decomposing in his Tesla 7 months ago.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
7 months ago.
Whoa.
He was on tour. He had to cancel his remaining tour dates and basically just disappeared into the bushes like the Homer Simpson GIF.
Wow.
LAPD said in a statement, "Our office is aware of the arrest of David Anthony Burke, but... by the department, the case is expected to be presented to the Major Crimes Division, at which point prosecutors will review the facts and evidence to determine whether there is sufficient evidence to file charges."
Whoa.
Yeah.
He,
it's a horrible story.
He is being held without bail. I mean,
whoa.
Does it really take 7 months after finding body decomposing in somebody's
I
car?
I mean...
No,
how, you
got to
arrest
shouldn't.
Somebody. Yeah,
I feel like within a month, somebody's got to go to jail.
Yeah,
well, you got to figure they brought him in for questioning right away because it's his car, and then for some reason they had to release him. And yeah, it doesn't make sense.
I just feel for the
long.
Girl's
if
family.
If you're a family,
I feel
family,
for her
you
family.
Want, that's justice delayed. Let's move on to. Do you have a happier story for story
real
number two?
Quick, fun little story there.
Oh,
my
no.
very first artist interview I had to set up for Lollapalooza a couple years ago was with David.
Can I tell you that right before this announcement came out, Max, had, my Max, had actually been in Chicago seeing him in concert. It was literally a day and a half later when the announcement came out. Oh, yeah. It was.
So you are both financing an alleged murderer.
I shook his
Enjoy
hand.
Your Friday.
I talked to him and his mom. How do you think I feel when I saw that? I went, oh, my God.
You had to go back and take your selfie down off
I
your
know.
Insta.
Wild. No, I didn't take any. Anyway. Hollywood legend agrees to another sequel.
Swipe.
Oh, I know this one. I want to hear this because I don't know the justification. I'll stay.
Parker?
I'm going to stay.
Okay.
Parker's going to side with Brian for a change. Hey-o. Word on the streets of Hollywood is Tom Cruise has agreed to production of a Top Gun 3.
Oh, this was not the story I thought it was. I would have passed on this
Do you get magic in a bottle a third time?
This news comes 1 month before the 40th anniversary of the first movie. Remember, Top Gun Maverick was a massive hit, grossing almost $1.5 billion worldwide.
Don't you think, though, that's because there had been so many years between one and two that people were excited, and now you're going to try to duplicate two?
Yeah, but it's also the mentality of people like Pete Hegseth. They wanted to see... a lot of really loud jets.
I mean, you got to try it a third time, right? $1.5 billion, as you know.
Well, he's made 87 Mission Impossible movies,
right? And
but
you know,
how are they going to fit? How are they going to fit the jets with a an old person wheelchair?
There's a trend in Hollywood right now, and a lot of filmmakers have come out and talked about this. That to get any movie greenlit right now is you need an IP associated with the film. That's why we're not getting original thoughts, because studios don't want to take chances on things
right.
that aren't proven to work.
Well,
Top Gun Maverick was so good, yeah. so they're like, yeah, do it. Tom, you want to do this? Do it.
It's also why the movie industry isn't as great as it was, the thought process behind it all.
Wow. All right, well.
What a disappointment
like
for Brian.
Top Gun,
anyway.
It was a disappointment.
Like Top Gun Nursing Home.
I thought there was
home.
Another story.
Top Gun Nursing Home, that's
another journalist was fired over the Diana Rossini-Mike Vrabel story.
Stay.
Of course, Jamie knows the story.
yeah.
Brian?
I'm going to pass, swipe.
I only saw the headline. I'm staying, Frank.
Oh.
Two stays from Parker. NFL reporter Chrissy Freud has been fired from her position at USA Today after she publicly celebrated Diana Rossini's resignation from The Athletic.
Oops.
Freud posted on social media in response to Rossini's resignation letter. She said, "I'm sure you were told to submit this or you'd get fired instead. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Wow.
We know who you really are and what you've been up to for years.
Ooh.
It does so much detriment to women in sports who have done things the right
wow.
way. Now, here's what I'll say. As somebody who sat in a press box for 5 years and was the director of a sports station, there are a lot of rumors. I know about a lot of people. So I'm sure.
Men and women?
Men and women.
Yeah.
For multiple different things.
Wow.
It doesn't surprise me that people are coming out and saying they're
yeah.
not surprised.
Wow.
Do I think she should have gotten fired? I'm not sure. But that was swipe or stay.
Well, maybe we do a page six where Frank just does blind items.
Little
spill the tea with
Frank. Social. We could do those on
All right, we got to go. When we come back, Devin Remiker, the chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, joins us. You don't want to miss it. It's Daybreak, and this is the Civic Media Network.
Back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and happy Friday. We love being able to say that, especially, you know, when we're getting ready for another weekend. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Well, 2026 could be a big year for Wisconsin Democrats. Last week, Democrats saw a new state Supreme Court justice elected. In November, they stand a chance of eliminating the Republican majority in the Assembly, as well as continuing to hold on to the governor's office. The man behind Wisconsin's Democratic organization is Devin Remiker, the new chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Devin joins us now to talk about the Democratic Party's plans for Wisconsin in the upcoming elections and beyond. Devin, thanks for being here. First off, congrats on the big win for Judge Chris Taylor. Now, it wasn't just a win. I've called it an old-fashioned shellacking. It was a huge win. So what message do you and the party take from such a decisive victory?
Well, right now, I believe people in Wisconsin are hungry for change. They have seen what Trump and the Republicans that enable him have done, both to the nation and to the state of Wisconsin. Skyrocketing cost of living, rising gas prices, ripping away people's health care, the food on their table. And they are sick and tired and fed up with it. And, you know, one thing that I found very interesting, there's so many different ways to look at how stunning the victory was for Justice-elect Chris Taylor. But there were some municipalities that actually cast more votes for Chris Taylor than they did for Harris in the 2024 presidential election, despite the fact 3.4 million people voted in the fall November 2024 election. There were folks that were so fired up, they showed up, changed their mind and cast a vote for Chris Taylor just to stick it to Trump. And I think that is a sign of things to come in November.
That's where I wanted to go with that. What do you think that Democrats can do to replicate from this race going into the midterms, Devin?
Well, obviously, a Supreme Court race is very different than the kind of races we'll have in the fall. But ultimately, it comes down to talking to voters and meeting them where they're at on the issues that they care most about. And in the context of the Supreme Court race, I think that was very clear when it came to women's health care, protection of our democracy. Those were issues that Chris Taylor was on the right side of, that voters wanted to make sure that those rights fundamentally were protected in the state of Wisconsin. Now, this fall, when we're having elections for governor, state legislature, and Congress, I think cost of living is going to be front and center to voters. Obviously, that's not something that has as direct of a tie to a Supreme Court race. race. But this is something that clearly in every single poll, in what we're hearing from people on the doors, is front and center on folks' minds. So when I'm talking to candidates, I give them one advice: remain relentlessly focused on helping to make sure that those kitchen table conversations are a little easier for Wisconsinites all across the state if and when they're elected.
Are kind of piggybacking on that, Devin. So obviously getting Democratic candidates elected is the main goal. But how does the party facilitate that on a day-to-day basis leading up to November?
Yeah, great question. So we do a host of things at the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. We are known for year-round organizing, and that's a program that I am super proud to be able to both have helped start, but now continue in my role as chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. So we talked to tens of thousands of individuals during the course of the Supreme Court race, and it was a great test run for the fall, where we'll be talking to hundreds of thousands of folks all across Wisconsin in the months and the weeks, certainly leading up to Election Day. On top of that, we make sure that when folks cast their ballot, those ballots actually count. There are so many attempts by Republicans to suppress votes in Wisconsin. A lot of the laws that Scott Walker passed when Republicans had a trifecta are still on the books that make it harder to register, harder to provide voter identification. All these things are still challenges we have to deal with. So we have a great voter protection team that operates a hotline, 608-336-3232. If anyone ever has trouble voting or a question about that, they can call there. And we try to communicate everywhere. A program that's new to the Democratic Party of Wisconsin that I started is called the 72 County Strategy Program. And really, this is making sure that, you know, outside of the work that we do talking to voters, with so many folks who are looking to engage right now, who are fired up, showing up to a No Kings protest as like the first political action of their lifetime, I want to make sure that they have a home that's easy to find in the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. So we have folks working in each and every county right now to ensure whether it's helping them to open a year-round office, to have a membership drive, to host their own sort of events at farmers markets or parades or festivals, that they have the tools and the resources and the know-how to be able to get it done and help grow our party from the bottom up even more than it already is a strong grassroots organization.
We're talking with Devin Remiker. He is the Wisconsin Democrats chair, wisdems.org, if you want to check out more about the party. Now, you've actually said that Democrats are overperforming everywhere. And we've seen it, not just in this particular race last week with Justice-elect Chris Taylor, but in other states around the country. And in Wisconsin specifically, we saw a large shift towards the Democrats from the 2024 election. In some counties, it was a 20-point plus shift towards Chris Taylor in this particular election. So what do you think is specifically changing, Devin, with those rural voters, maybe outside Milwaukee, Madison, and, you know, even cities like Eau Claire, because that was also a large shifted county?
Absolutely. With voters across the state, but I think particularly in rural Wisconsin, they're looking at what Republicans have done to them. And it's actually worse than nothing. They have actively kicked rural people in the teeth. You know, all of our Republican congressional members, Derek Van Orden, Brian Stile, Tom Tiffany, they all voted for the big, awful budget that closed rural hospitals. Derek Van Orden actually voted to potentially close a hospital in Osseo in his own congressional district. You know, when you look at the places that utilize things like healthcare funding from the government, things that will be taken away through the subsidies, those are actually hardest hitting for rural Wisconsin. And not only that, but it's even harder to find access to that healthcare. In addition to the rural hospitals that are closing, so many hospitals are having to scale back the hours that they offer, services or emergency services. Some places in the northern Wisconsin, you can't actually access a hospital if you have an accident more than, you know, or less than an hour away from you. Like there are true healthcare deserts popping up. And I think people have finally seen that these objective sort of gut punches from Republicans have broken through kind of the spin and the noise that the Republican Party has talked a big game and not delivered. And they are ready to help ensure that there is a change in November.
Devin, one of my big criticisms as a Democrat is that the party is divided amongst itself. And especially here in Wisconsin, we see that where the real progressive wing of the Democratic Party and the more moderate wing of the Democratic Party can't seem to coalesce. What kind of challenges and how does that produce for you? And how do you try to bridge the gap within the party, let alone we don't even worry about the Republican? It's like we got to come together ourselves first. How do you handle that?
Great question, Brian. I like to look at challenges and turn them into opportunities.
All right.
And to me, the sort of diversity of ideology within our party, it's a healthy thing. Ensuring that we can actually be a party that leaves room for people that sort of span the ideological spectrum to come in and still feel supported and like they have a place is one of the most critical functions a party can perform. I mean, if you look at the Republican Party, you know, what happens is that if you don't go along with Donald Trump, if you don't listen to sort of his mandates and change with the winds as he just, you know, spins on a dime with whatever happens to be advantageous for him, you are exiled. You are pushed out. I mean, there are so many former Republicans who have now become members and leaders of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin because of that exact phenomenon. So, you know, sometimes it's hard. It's hard work to make sure that everyone is able to have a voice, to have a say. But I fundamentally believe that the role of the party, whether that is in a primary race or sort of in a bigger picture discussion about the issues, is to be sort of a neutral arbiter, to allow folks to have that conversation, to get a fair shake. And at the end, know that no one had their thumb on the scale, that no one was trying to shut them out or shut them down, so that win or lose, we can all lock arms together and move forward towards the general election. And I have seen too many times that, you know, these divisive contests nationally in other states have divided the party when folks have felt like the party made the decision and took that away from voters. So people ask me all the time about the gubernatorial primary and whether or not it gives me heartburn. And
well, that was going to be one of our questions for you.
Yeah,
so go ahead.
I'm sure it was.
Is it giving you heartburn?
Listen, I think having a ton of fantastic candidates crisscrossing the state months in advance of the general election, talking about the issues that matter to voters right now and where the Democratic Party stands on them in different ways, in different contexts, is only going to help us later on in the year. We already have a fantastic plan with Governor Tony Evers and the Governor Readiness Project to make sure that in that narrow 84-day window post-primary, that our candidate has what they need to be successful, no matter who it is. And ultimately, this is where that hard work of allowing people to participate in the process, giving everyone a fair shake, is going to pay off. We only have 84 days between the primary and the general election because we don't anoint our nominee like the Republican Party did with Tom Tiffany, who's going to be a terrible general election candidate, but just happened to win the beauty pageant for Trump's endorsement. But that ability for us to be the unity, the unifying umbrella for everyone that was in this contest and work together for success in November, it is going to help deliver us victory.
Devin Remiker, he is the chair of the Wisconsin Democrats, wisdems.org. Let's stay on the topic of this primary, because we know from recent polling there are a lot of undecided voters, and it's still fairly early in the process. We know the primary isn't until August, but how do you get those people engaged and essentially break through and reach them so that they are paying attention to what is a very critical race for the state of Wisconsin?
This is something that will come a little bit with time, right? We had a whole statewide election before we get into this next statewide election, because it's Wisconsin, you know, it's always election season. So I think folks will increasingly be tuning into this contest as we head towards the summer. You know, right now, the candidates, as of yesterday, are starting to collect signatures to get on the ballot, engaging with folks person to person to win their support. And it's only going to ramp up as we head towards the summer. I believe folks will have so many opportunities to get to know our candidates, to make the decision that they feel is right for them, and ultimately decide, you know, who they're going to vote for on August 11th. But I think they'll also see in the process how great all of the candidates are, and the fact that no matter who wins, they can get behind them, because we know the option on the other side of Tom Tiffany would be an absolute disaster for Wisconsin.
So going back to what you said about challenges and opportunities, and what you just said about any of the seven so far would make a good governor, how then, what's the opportunity that you have to convince voters who may be backing one candidate who does not become the Democratic nominee that, yes, we all need to band together, because a unified front is always going to be better than divisiveness?
A lot of this comes with being able to highlight the alternatives. You know, what is the other option here? Mm-hmm. I think Democrats, some folks may, Democrats, independents may have learned lessons of what happens when we sit out elections. I mean, We're seeing in real time that, I would hope so, but part of me knows so. I mean, if you look at what has happened after Trump's second election here, a lot of what people chalked up to hysteria, to oh no, you know, he would never attempt to cut the subsidy. He would never, you know, hurt Medicare or go after Social Security or try to, you know, crack down on our freedoms and liberties and take away people's guns. He has gone so much further than so many people expected. You know, one thing that was really striking to me as part of our year-round organizing program is when we go door to door, we hear folks and listen to what issues matter most to them. And more so than ever in the past, even from independents and folks who sometimes sit out midterm elections, we are hearing democracy and authoritarianism is both their key concerns for them, when previously that didn't really chart before. So I think that this is a time where so many folks are open, when only 26% of independents approve of the job Trump is doing and the Republican Party is Trump's party. When you look at what this means, whether it's for Tom Tiffany, for Mike Roberts in the state Senate and Howard Markline in the state Senate, or all of the assembly Republican incumbents, their problem is they own this record top to bottom because they can do nothing besides appease Donald Trump.
Well, Devin, thank you so much for joining us today. We hope to talk to you again before November. Congratulations again on the Supreme Court victory, and good luck as we head toward November. Devin Remicker is the chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Have a great rest of your day, Devin. Thanks very much. And we'll be back with more. This is Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
7:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Tomorrow, if you did not know, which I did not, tomorrow's Record Store Day. Yes, it's an annual event. Record Store Day started in 2007, and it's back. And so is our senior producer, Frank. We are not swiping and staying on Record Store Day, but Frank is all about this, and he brought it to our attention. So we're like, all right, Frank, what do you got? Here's a question for you, though, before we talk to Frank. What was your go-to record store growing up, or even now, and the first album you bought that changed your life? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. All right, Frank, it's Record Store Day. You're going to be out hunting vinyl with the rest of the hipsters tomorrow. Is that the game?
I haven't decided. So if you go to National Record Store Day's website, they do have a list of all the limited and special releases that are coming out. Because a lot of artists team up with Record Store Day, the organization, yeah, to release special things, right?
Okay.
Now, here's the issue. It's like, as we've talked about hunts on the show before.
Yes, you love to hunt for items.
I love to hunt for things. This is more waiting in line and hoping you get up to the front.
Right.
And it's not sold out. Every record store does things differently.
Yes.
I know a popular one in Chicago, they don't have everything out on display. Everything's behind the counter. And you just get in line behind the counter, and you have to physically ask.
Wow.
If they still have it, you can't just walk by and grab two
something.
Or something.
They want you to be a fan.
Yeah, okay. You have to specifically
Nerds.
Name what you want. And I know we went 2 years ago, and one of the things that my wife wanted, we watched two people in front of us get the last one.
Oh.
The guy goes, oh, you're lucky. This was the last one. This was after waiting in line for about an hour and a half.
Oh, no. That's brutal.
Dude, there's nothing worse. Highest highs and lowest lows.
Nicely done, Parker.
Good job, sometimes. Parker.
Sometimes.
But no, I love Record Store Day. I think what I love so much about record stores is they're all, for the most part, locally owned and operated. Like, it really is like the local color of the community.
And there's always a passion when you go in and you talk to the people who either own it or just work there.
Mm-hmm.
At a couple of my favorite stores in Madison, because we have a pretty vast record collection at our house. When you go in, there's a couple of people who have literally worked in this shop part-time for like the last 15 years. And they're like, yeah, sometimes I go on and I do other full-time things, but somehow it just keeps pulling me back in to do a shift here or there, and then all of a sudden they're on the rotation again regularly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the coolest part, because it becomes a little bit like a community. It's like anything when you're considered maybe a collector or a lover of something.
Right.
And
well, Frank, if you want to go on a hunt, Gary in Madison just sent us a text. He's listening on WMDX for the next couple minutes. Hopefully he'll stay after we go to Stephanie Miller. But St. Vincent de Paul in Madison on Williamson Street just got in several hundred LPs from a private collector.
Nice. See, and now thank that we've figured that out,
Gary has intel.
He does.
He has the inside scoop.
Gary already went through and got all the good ones.
Exactly.
And now it's just Burt Bacharach albums.
But Brian, I liked your second question, which was, what was the first album you bought that really like kind of changed your life? And I'll never forget, it was right when I first started getting into music as a young lad. Because, you know, I sat in the car, my dad played his Pink Floyd albums and his Rush albums as we were driving to baseball practice and whatnot. So I liked it, but I wasn't like, it was because dad liked it. So we both enjoyed it. I remember the first time I heard American Idiot by Green Day.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was like, I really like this. And I remember going up to my parents and being like, I want this CD. And they kind of looked at each other because they had the, you know, the explicit warning on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think I was in fourth grade. But they looked at each other and were like, my dad goes, yeah, that all their new music's really good. You can have it. And to this day, that album holds up.
Wow.
No, it does hold up. It's a great album. It is a great album. I would say for me, it was probably Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation. And there's a story behind that. It was actually a record that was given to me by my uncle. He was big into jazz, and he loved a lot of really diverse black artists. And I would go to their house, my aunt and uncle's house, and I would stay with them on the weekends and things. And he always had this amazing collection of music happening in the background. And, you know, he started having me listen to Janet Jackson's really early stuff. And then he gave me that album for Christmas that particular year. And I mean, that's the one with like Black Cat on it. That's obviously, that was
just hooked.
Yeah, it was amazing. And then just the sounds, right? Because Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis produced always Janet Jackson's early stuff. So you just heard all of these distinct sounds that only that Jackson family had. It was an amazing, amazing album.
Brian?
See, it's weird. Neither my mom or dad were into music. We had talk radio on in the house nonstop and in the
that
car
tracks.
Nonstop. But then I started listening to Top 40 radio, WLS, the Big 89 that was Clear Channel all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got into that. But the first time I heard the opening licks for Eruption on Van Halen's first album, that was it. I was like, oh, man. And I wore the grooves out of that album. Just playing it over and over and over. Parker, do you listen to music or just a spoken word beat
what
poetry?
What Irish folk band?
What sea shanties changed your life, Parker?
Oh, boy. I think I'm going to go with Ben Platt. He's the original singer of Evan Hansen.
Sure.
From on Broadway.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's got an album that I really enjoyed, the Prime Theater Boy in high school.
That went without saying.
Yes. So, yeah, I
can't remember. As you said Ben Platt.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of that album exactly, but he had something that came out that I really enjoyed in high school.
It's called Dateless in High School.
hey, I had a girlfriend in high school.
Hey.
Mark to Canada. Rush 2112 was Mark's album.
Awesome.
That's a great
album,
too.
It's what I listened to in the car to football and baseball practice, Mark.
All right, on the other side, WMDX, you're going to Stephanie Miller. We'll miss you, but you can always still listen on the Civic Media app. We will be back with headlines and stuff you need to know and a whole lot more in the final hour of the program. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson at 7:59 right now on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.